Okay, that's quite enough of that. It's Tuesday, it's 4:30-ish, and you would know what that means. It's time for In the Cage with Bards, Vancouver's only mixed martial arts program. And until someone tells me differently, I am still Carlin Bardsley. A lot to get to today, a lot going on. UFC 117 over the weekend. But right now, joining us live, we have UFC three-time submission of the night winner and the pride of Red Deer, Alberta. We have Jason McDonald on the line. How are you, Jason? Jason, do we still have you?
I'm here.
All right, good stuff. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, my friend. Some days are better than others, you know what I mean? Now, getting into this here, at the beginning of your career, you started off in the Maximum Fighting Championships. Now, was that just a question of geographical convenience, being a Red Deer boy, or was there something else that drew you to that promotion?
No, at the time, they were in their early stages, their first couple of shows, and Mark Pavlich gave me an opportunity to fight in his early shows, and I was able to continue, you know, help build my career, the early part of my career there in his organization. He was able to provide me with good, you know, quality opponents, and, you know, it worked out well. It was close to home, and really at that time the sport was, you know, and it's pretty infant stages, and there wasn't a whole lot of options in Canada there anyways.
Yeah, that's true. In the early part of your career, you fought and you defeated some big names, but you rarely ventured out of Alberta. Again, was that just a question of opportunity, or is it just, you know, you're a homebody, you like hanging out in Alberta?
Well, I think no, at that point, I really had no management. I was just fighting on my own as a hobby, and you know, I wasn't looking too far ahead into the future, and I didn't have a manager. I just took fights when they were offered to me. And as I said, at that point, there wasn't a ton out there. They were doing fights in Kelowna at that time, mm-hmm. and they were doing some fights here at the Maximum Fighting Championship. And then down east, there was the IFC, but that was really focused on, at that point, the bigger name guys. And besides that, there wasn't a ton out there. There wasn't a lot of options for me. So it worked out well for me.
Now, your first few fights, you had to face some pretty tough veterans, Bill the Butcher Mahood and Shannon Rich. Obviously, it worked out for you. You came out with W's, but was there any time when you felt that you were being thrown to the wolves at all?
No, I think at that time, and as I said, the sport was so really in the early stages and still developing that nobody really knew any better. No one really knew you know, about checking records. I don't even know if there was a database, if there was something like SureDog. And I think people were just happy to be able to fight. And regardless of who they were, you know, they were given, who was put in front of them, they wanted to take advantage of that and just fight. You know, I recall fighting my first probably five or six fights, maybe even more than that, without even being paid. So it was basically a
labor of love.
Yeah, a situation where If you want to do this, this is who you had to fight, and this is where you had to fight him at, and take it or leave it.
There was a period in your career when you lost four straight, albeit all the very tough guys, Matt Horwich, Jason Brills, Marvin Eastman, Shoni Carter, all UFC veterans. Even though that they are the tough guys they are, was there a period of time where that became discouraging for you?
Well, I think any time you lose, it becomes discouraging. I think at that point in my career, I had begun to take it a lot more serious, and it grew to be more than just a hobby. It was, you know, it was growing into, I was trying to make I don't know if at that point I was thinking I was going to make a career out of it financially wise, but I was certainly hoping to, you know, to get looking towards the UFC and looking to get into the big shows. And I think anytime you train hard for a fight and put a lot of time and effort and work in, and come up short, it's disappointing. And to lose four in a row, it's, regardless of who you're fighting, if it's top level guys or whoever, it was very discouraging for me. And you know, I had to stay focused, and really that's really when things turned around for me. I needed some changes. I needed to make some changes in you know, my training, and I really just turned things around and tried to take those four losses and turn them around and turn into some good.
When did the UFC first take interest in you?
I don't know. I know I tried out for the first season of the Ultimate Fighter television show, and then...
Oh, is that right? So, is that how you got on the radar, you guess? Or?
Yeah, so I guess at that point they were aware of me, and they knew who I was, and obviously, as you said, I went to a point there where I lost some fights, and I don't know if I fell off the radar, but, you know, obviously I wasn't a hot commodity at that point after losing four fights in a row. But I was able to take that, turn it around, and win a bunch of fights in a row there, and finally get some good quality wins against top level guys, and get my butt into the UFC.
Your first fight in the UFC was against Ed Shortfuse Herman. He was fresh off being awarded the contract based on his performance on The Ultimate Fighter. Did you ever feel like you were being brought in to lose to an up-and-comer the UFC wanted to promote, or were you just excited to get the opportunity?
Well, I think a bit of both. I was extremely excited to get the opportunity, and I was extremely excited that opportunity was against Ed Herman. You know, someone that just came off the television show, had a tremendous amount of hype around him, but an opponent who I really felt that I could, that I could go out there and beat. And, honestly, going into that fight, I remember being extremely confident. I just came off a tough fight with Joe Dirksen, and Joe had a win not too long before that over Ed Herman. And I was confident that going into that fight against Herman, and then obviously my UFC debut, that I was going to come away from a win. So I it was a great, there was a lot of positives there for me at that time.
Absolutely. After that fight, they put you in against Herman's Team Quest teammate, Chris Lieben, who at that point only lost once in the UFC, and that was to Anderson Silva. How did you feel going into that fight?
Well, once again, I was riding a tremendous winning streak there, so things were going good for me. I had been extremely active, and I was fighting a lot against pretty decent guys, and each fight my confidence was growing and growing, and once again, I knew Lieben was an opponent that, if I was going to stand in front of him and try to throw punches with him, there was a good chance I was going to get knocked out. But if his one blaring weakness was, he was susceptible to getting submitted. And so obviously, once again, I was pretty confident leading into that fight that I was, if I stayed away from a brawl with him, that I could be able to submit him and come away with another big win.
After those two fights and two sub of the night honors, were you starting to feel like the Team Quest killer?
Well, I mean, I was given lots of monikers at that time. I was given the Tough Killer and the Team Quest, but I was just extremely confident at that point, and obviously positive because things were going well. I was winning. I was continuing, I think, to put on good performances, and I think it was a good time for me right then. I was on a great win streak, and regardless of what they called me, I was enjoying it.
So after two wins over two Team Quest guys, any talk of you fighting Matt Lindland at all?
I would love that fight. That's a fight I'd love to have before I retired. But I don't know. Matt Lindland is tied up in the Strike Force, and hopefully I'll see out my career in the UFC.
Herman and Lieben are both redheads like yourself. Did you ever think Dana White was trying to start some ginger warfare?
I don't know. Quite possibly. Maybe he was trying to sell it to the Scottish fans.
You went on to fight Rich Franklin in his home state. What are your memories of that fight? And was there any talk of a title shot for you if you upset Franklin?
Well, I remember leading into that fight that obviously, because I had beat Lieben and Herman in pretty, in pretty definitive fashion, that, I remember just... when they gave me the fight against Rich Franklin, it was just days after the Lieben fight, and I apparently, though I hadn't heard of it at that time or prior to it, that Dana White had gone on record and said that the winner of the Lieben McDonald fight was going to fight Rich Franklin, and so I assume that they assumed it would be Chris Lieben, and they'd have a great stand-up war, but it turned out to be me. And I can honestly, I remember being somewhat intimidated, if that's the word, or in awe. Much like GSP said when he fought Matt Hughes the first time, that he was fighting one of his heroes, or one of his idols. I at that point, or just months before that point, I was sitting in my living room watching Rich Franklin beat the crap out of Dave Loazzo and Nate Nate.
Corey.
Nate Corey, thank you. And you'd think I would remember him.
Yeah, oddly enough, huh?
Yeah.
It's something enough. You're trying to forget, right?
Yeah, maybe I just blocked him out of my memory. But, you know, so I was a huge Rich Franklin fan. And obviously when that fight was put in front of me, you know, I can't deny, I was pretty intimidated to step in there. And I don't know if intimidated was a word, but really in awe. Here, one second, I'm sitting in my living room watching this guy, and the next minute I'm standing in the octagon, and at that point, one of the biggest, I think it was the biggest crowd of all time in Columbus,
mm-hmm.
and staring across at Rich Franklin. So it really was a huge step up for me.
Absolutely. Is there any part of you that wants that fight back? I mean, you put in a tremendous effort, but still came up a little short. GSP, you mentioned after the first Hughes fight, you said next time he would make it a different fight. Do you still feel that way about another possible showdown with Franklin?
Well, I mean, Franklin's obviously up at 205,
right, yeah.
and we're really at different points in our career. But, you know, obviously anytime you have a loss, I think as a fighter, you would love the opportunity to avenge it. I think, you know, looking back, the Rich, although he's very, very good and very tough, I obviously gave him too much respect, you know, borderlining on not being able to fight properly, fight my fight, because I was giving him too much respect. And obviously if we were ever to fight again, I would know what to expect from him. And from a fighting standpoint, I would give him, you know, a lot less respect when we stepped into the ring. And I love Rich; he's a great guy, you know, one of the nicest guys in the UFC. But when it comes to fighting, I would definitely give him a lot less respect this time around, and hopefully be able to give him a much better fight.
After the Franklin fight, you defeated Rory Singer, and then they put you in there against Yushin Okami. Is Okami as difficult to control and move around the cage as his reputation suggests?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Okami is a big, strong guy. He's, he's just really big and strong, and I don't know any other way. He doesn't do any one thing great, but he's so big and so strong that he imposes his will on you, and it's really hard to do anything about it. I battled for 3 rounds with this big, strong guy on top of me, and I, regardless of what I did, I could not shake this guy off me, and you know, we've seen him just to continue to do that. He just, with the exception of the loss that he just had recently, you know, the guy's undefeated in the UFC. Yeah, so I think he's 9-9 wins in the UFC.
Yeah, 9-1, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a type of guy that he's not flashy. It's nothing that really catches people's opinions. But he's a. I don't want to call him a grinder. It's just, he really is.
He does seem
solid.
To be the John Fitch of the 85 division.
Well, I mean, the thing with Fitch is a grinder. He's constantly working for these takedowns and he's grinding out wins. But Okami just is imposing. You know, he kind of takes you completely out of your game and just kind of gets on top of you and nullifies you. And I definitely think that it'd be a much more interesting fight between Okami and Chael than it will be between Anderson and Okami. And I don't know which one of those fights will happen first, if Dana White will carry through and give Okami the shot at the title or Vitor Belfort get it. I really don't know. But I would much rather see a fight between Okami and Chael Sonnen than I would Anderson.
You had to fight on UFC's first card in Canada. You got to take out Joe Dirksen, and you got to KO of the night. What was sweeter for you, the adulation of the Montreal crowd, being able to beat down Joe Dirksen again, or the cash bonus afterwards?
Well, I think it was a combination of them all, but, I mean, to be 100%.
Uh-oh.
That's again. Yeah. We had a fight. I took a fight against Joe before I was in the UFC, so Joe had already been a UFC veteran, and I took the fight against him in his hometown and went in there and, you know, over 5 rounds beat the crap out of him and was able to submit him late in the fight. And for a couple of years after, you know, Joe claimed that, you know, the only reason I won that fight is because I cut him in the first round, and the cut really changed the momentum of the fight. And Of course it did. That's what fighting is all about.
Right, yeah.
That's, you know, like, you know, I was on top of Joe Dirksen and hit him with an elbow and cut him. And, of course, that changed the momentum of the fight. But
that's what they pay you for, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was supposed to do, was to go in there. And then, so, you know, there really was some bad blood between him and I because, you know, I felt disrespected. He was going around and, you know, a UFC veteran, and I was trying to fight my way in there, and I beat him. And now he's going around making excuses and then downplaying, you know, how I beat him. And at that point, he was a black belt, and I had choked him out. And so, and then come full circle, he apparently struck up a deal with Joe Silva that if he took a short notice fight, that he could pick his next fight. And he handpicked me. So
he wanted to prove himself on the big stage.
That's how that fight came about. Was he was given a, you know, he took a short notice fight and kind of did a favor for the UFC, and he personally asked to fight me in the UFC, kind of as his reward for taking the short notice fight. So yeah, there was a lot of, you know, the hard feelings or bad feelings going into that fight. So. Being able to knock him out the second time, you know, or beat him the second time with a knockout, and it really was pretty great. And then to walk away with the $75,000 made it even that much more sweeter.
Yeah, did you send Joe a lovely fruit basket to thank him for picking you?
I think I bought him a beer at the hotel, but I don't think he drank it.
You faced off against Damian Maia in what was just an amazing ground battle. Given that you both had two Sub of the Night honors, how disappointing was it that he was the first one to get to three?
Well, I mean, yeah, I made a poor error judgment there in fighting and choosing to fight, you know, Damian Maia on the ground. The whole training camp, the whole game plan was not to do that, was to stay away from that, because obviously everyone knows how great he is on the ground.
And right.
As the fight unfolds and then we get into the heat of the battle, all of a sudden I find myself, you know, in a ground war with this guy. And then I start to get stubborn, like just stupid stubborn, telling myself that, you know, I'm gonna just keep engaging this guy on the ground because I'm gonna make it into a battle. Who submits who? And
the adrenaline kicked in for you.
Yeah, it was obviously a poor choice for me. But you know, looking back, you know, if you can walk away from a fight with a loss and hold your head high, that was definitely one for me.
Definitely
a fight that, you know. Sometimes you lose and you walk away disappointed and, you know, not happy with yourself and not happy with your performance. And then there's other times when you, you know, walk away and you can hold your head high and say, you know what, we had a hell of a fight and I just came up short. And that was the case in the Damian Maia fight. And it gave me some great confidence leading into my next fight.
Yeah, you bounced back great against Jason Lambert. You racked up another Sub of the Night bonus. Three sub and one KO bonus. That's a nice little chunk of change. There's not a whole lot to do in Red Deer, so how are you spending the money?
Well, I think it's deceiving. If people go on the internet and they see that you made a $75,000 bonus, and they think, oh, you're rich. But, you know, the U.S. government takes their cut out of there, and then you pay your management fees, and this and that. It doesn't, at the end of the day, you don't walk home with a great amount of money. No, I'm not complaining, but I wasn't sitting at home counting my dollars, that's for sure.
After back-to-back losses to Wilson Gouveia and Nate Quarry, you got cut by the UFC. How disappointing was that, considering you had earned all those fight bonuses?
Well, for me, it kind of blindsided me a little bit. I was, obviously, I know as an athlete, as a fighter, you're paid to perform, and I really felt, well, I still feel like, you know, up until that point, I had some great fights. You know, I had some great fights, the Maia fight, I you know, the Lieben fight, the Herman fight, Lambert. I had really stepped up to the plate for them, and you know, I took a lot of tough fights and put on some great fights, and then all of a sudden, I had a couple, you know, a couple bad ones, and I won't deny, you know, that the Quarry fight was probably the worst fight I've ever had. You know, I come out there and virtually get one punched and then get beat senseless for a couple of seconds and the referee stops it. So, you know, I was definitely disappointed with my two performances, but I really thought that maybe I deserved a mulligan on that one and would have been given another opportunity. And, you know, especially because there's a lots of other fighters out there that have lost three in a row, and we're still kicking around. So I must say I was a little shocked and obviously disappointed with that decision. But
when they let you go, did they mention to you that they had interest in bringing you back?
Well, I mean, the door was kind of left partway open. You know, basically I was told to that I wasn't. I had lost two fights in a row, and at that time they had just taken over the WEC, and they had a huge roster of fighters, and obviously they weren't doing a fight every other week at that point, so mm-hmm. they weren't desperate for fighters, and they basically said go string some wins together, and yeah, we want you back. So I mean, I did my best to go out there and do that. Go out there and take the toughest fights I could, and fight the best opponents I could, and try to come away with some wins, some quick wins, and then get back to the UFC.
Yeah, you racked up three very impressive wins here in Canada, and then they did invite you to come back. How did that come about? Were you in contact with them all that time, and they were just kind of keeping tabs on what you were doing up north, or?
Well, I'm not sure what they were doing, but I was up here. You know, doing my best to put on good fights against tough guys, and I really felt like that was the shortest way back there. Was to, you know, I could have been up here in Canada or in the States or wherever fighting, you know, unknown guys and racking up, you know, 6, 7, 8 wins, but I didn't feel like that was going to get me back there mm-hmm. as quick as if I just stepped up to the plate, took some tough fights against some. You know, some quality veterans, and hopefully get back there as fast as possible. And you know, I'm not sure how it all came about, but I do recall sending Joe Silva a text after I don't know if it was after the Horridge fight or if it was after the Vernon White fight, and just kind of, you know, I've had a good relationship with Joe Silva, and I just kind of sent him a text and said, "Hey Joe, just to let you know, I've been." You know, staying busy, racked up a couple wins, and I'm hoping that you guys will have me back sometime soon, or something along those lines. And and lo and behold, the phone rang a couple of days later, and it was Joe asking me if I was in shape and ready to fight, and that was just days after the Horwich fight.
Yeah.
So I was able to fill in for David Loiseau.
It's a very Canadian way to promote yourself, very polite. It's kind of the anti-Chael Sonnen there.
Well, the thing was, I was pretty rattled, because here Joe Dirksen was getting a fight on the Montreal card, and I had just I just knocked out Joe Dirksen, you know, and I was like, wait a sec, how's this guy getting back in the UFC? And and really hadn't fought any named guys. He had racked off a couple wins, but hadn't really fought. And I don't mean to be bagging on Joe here, because we've patched things up and we're good now. But and then all of a sudden I was beating, you know, the toughest guys that I could fight out there, and wasn't back in the UFC. So I remember I was a little sour, but I guess
they weren't paying attention to your Sportsnet.ca column.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. Actually, Joe Silva pays very close attention to that, because anytime I write something he doesn't agree with, he always gives me a little phone call, and we always have a little debate over my standpoint and his standpoint on it. So,
oh, really? What was the last thing he decided to chew your ear about?
We were talking about a decision I didn't agree with. I can't remember the fight it was, but... him and I, he called me, and we had a chat about it, and we agreed to disagree. And it was more of a discussion than it was a scolding.
Okay. How did you become involved with Sportsnet?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. As far as the blog goes, leading into the Okami fight, I do believe it was the Sportsnet was developing their MMA portion of the website, and then they had contacted me and you know, asked me if I'd be interested in writing a blog leading into the fight. And, you know, I really felt like people wouldn't be interested in the things I had to say, but but it ended up being a huge success in their eyes anyways. I'm not sure in my eyes if it was or not. But people really enjoyed it, and they, you know, they had a lot of readers and a lot of feedback on it, and it just really snowballed from there. I started, continued doing the blog, and I think it continues to do pretty well. I try to just give my honest opinion about things, and try to give the readers an inside look on, you know, an inside perspective, so to speak. You know, I just try to be honest and then tell them what I'm doing, and it kind of gives them a peek into the, you know, how people prepare for fights, how people cut weight, and my opinion on different things that are going on in MMA. And I guess it became, you know, it continues to be popular, and from there we did some video stuff, and once again they had some positive feedback. So they've been great. They've been great to me, and they've given me an opportunity to go out there and basically give my opinion on things and let people read it. So it's really been a great relationship with them.
I know this is a, you know, a long time in the future, but you know, when the time comes where you hang up the gloves, is that something you've given thought to, being the next Showdown Joe, or you know, getting into MMA on the journalistic side?
Well, I don't know if Showdown Joe is ready to give up his job just yet, but yeah, I've talked with them about possibly doing, you know, more work with them in the future. Obviously, they're getting more and more involved in the sport. And, yeah, we've talked about, you know, in the future, me possibly doing some, you know, kind of color commentating, so to speak, from the events and things like that. So we'll see where that goes in the future. It's definitely something that I think from their standpoint, I kind of can open some doors and, you know, talk to different fighters and then get a different perspective than maybe the fighters would give just them. A normal media person, for lack of better word.
Right. For your UFC return, they matched up against John Salter, and it resulted in one of the more gruesome injuries seen on TV since Joe Theismann snapped his leg on Monday Night Football all those years ago. Take us back to that moment. What happened?
Well, you know, I really, at that moment, I felt like Joe Salter was a great opponent for me, you know, basically a wrestler. So here's a guy that if he wants to, you know, his goal is to take me to the ground, so where I'm more than happy to engage him in a fight. And really, I felt he had pretty limited striking skills, so, you know, we had trained a lot of stand-up, and I was really hoping to go out there and, you know, come away as my first knockout. And as the fight's unfolding, I feel that more and more that's going to happen. He's not comfortable. He's a bit awkward standing. I can tell he's not very comfortable, and he's flinching, and so I decided to try to set him up for this big kick, and as I'm throwing the kick, he kind of shoots in and runs into my knee, and then starts to basically fall on top of me. And I recall we were the first night of fight of the night, the canvas was extremely sticky, and I remember that from warm up. We went out to the octagon in warm up and just kind of moved around. I remember thinking to myself, this canvas is extremely sticky, and as we're falling, my foot is stuck. It's stuck to that canvas, and it's not going to move, and I can tell it's not going to move.
Was it stuck on a decal or just the canvas itself?
Well, no, I'm not sure exactly what it was stuck on, but it wasn't moving. and he's falling, and it almost was going in slow motion. I was thinking, if he falls on my leg, just the angle that he was falling and the way my foot was stuck to the mat, that it was going to snap my leg, and
it did.
Sure enough, it did. You know, I heard it snap both bones just like twigs, just snap, snap. And then, of course, I kind of fell and twisted. And at that point, I knew I'd hurt my ankle, but I wasn't sure the extent of the damage. And then I was able to pull it out from underneath them and look at it. And my heel is now where my toe was supposed to be, and my toes are facing backwards. So
yeah, when your foot is facing the wrong way, that's usually a sign something went wrong.
Yeah, my knee's facing forward and my toes are facing backwards, so there's something badly wrong here. And at that point, I pointed to the referee that my foot was broken or my leg was broken, and he stopped it immediately.
Yeah, well, at least he stopped it immediately. If it was Mazzagatti, the fight might have kept going. You don't know.
Well, hey, I'm not going to comment on the referees. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to open that can of worms. But, he stopped the fight right away, and I was, you know, basically in a tremendous amount of pain. The funny thing is it hurt initially, but it didn't hurt nearly as much until I made the connection with my eyes and my foot. And seeing the damage, and it seemed that the pain just kind of hit me, and yeah, it was pretty nasty.
Ouch. Have Dana or Joe Silva told you they're going to bring you back?
My manager received I'm not sure of the exact wording of it, but I think it's called an injury extension letter, where I was, my contract's going to be, you know, honored until I'm healed and able to get back in there. So I was very thankful for them, to them, for that, you know, to just not turn their back on me. And because, you know, if you look at it on records, it comes at a loss. And,
right.
And it really perplexes me how he didn't land a punch in the fight or get a submission or anything, but he walks away with a win.
So a rematch, is that something that you're looking for when you make your way back?
Absolutely. I would absolutely love a rematch. You know, he, John, I understand that he's, you know, not extremely experienced, and that was probably a huge fight for him, but he, you know, he jumped around and celebrated like he had just won the lottery as I'm laying there in excruciating pain. So,
did you find that disrespectful?
I don't know if I do. Yeah, I do. I do find that disrespectful, and I don't know if he personally was disrespecting me in that sense, but I mean, if it were me and I know that my opponent had just fell down and seriously hurt himself, I wouldn't be jumping and dancing around and cheering and acting, you know, acting the way he did. So yeah, I do feel like I was, you know, maybe indirectly disrespected. I don't think he purposely was, you know, trying to disrespect me personally, but mm-hmm. I think just those actions after the fact were a bit disrespectful. And so I would absolutely love an opportunity to go out there and finish what I started.
Mm-hmm. So how's your recovery coming? I know I'm distracting you from physio right now.
Yeah, I'm standing outside my physio office doing this, but I'm walking, so I'm up on 2 feet, and that's a good thing. I had some 2-3-inch screws removed 2 weeks ago that were, you know, basically after the injury, they went in there and they, in Montreal, they took me to the hospital and put me under and reset my foot back to pointing in the right direction, and then they put a cast on and sent me back to Alberta to have surgery. And they had surgery and had 2 steel plates put in on both sides of my ankle and 12 screws. And they put in 2 3-inch screws to just kind of hold my whole ankle joint in place and keep it from moving for 12 weeks.
Ouch.
So 2 weeks ago was 12 weeks, and they went in there and removed the 2 big 3-inch screws that were holding everything in place, and, you know, and x-rayed it, and the doctor says everything looks good.
Do you have a timetable for a return to the cage?
Well, I mean, the thing is he said you have a green light to do whatever you want to do. You can return to norm, whatever normal is for you. And but my foot is not being quite so cooperative as the doctor is. It's taken some time. It's more of a building a strength thing right now. I'm not in any pain, but I'm obviously being in a cast for 3 months, being on crutches. My ankle is weak. So I'm just trying to build up some strength in my ankle and then hopefully be able to return to, you know, full training, running, jogging, jumping, skipping, those types of things in the coming weeks here. It's only been 2 weeks and I've already come a long ways. I can jog lightly and I can do some light jumping and stuff. So I expect in the next 2 to 3 weeks that I'll be able to return to normal training for me.
Excellent. Now, if I get political on you for a second here, obviously, you know, fighting in Alberta, you haven't had to run into the kind of obstacles that we have out here in Vancouver. What's your take on the fact that Vancouver is so reluctant to sanction the sport? UFC appears to be one and done here. Recently, they just fired the Vancouver Athletic Commission head and replaced him with a city bureaucrat. They just recently dissolved the North Vancouver Athletic Commission. I know you fought out there. How does that look for you from the outside, an outsider's perspective?
Well, I mean, I really feel like that, you know, the sport has come so far, and is really the fastest growing sport in the world right now, and it's you know, it's spread worldwide, and I think that Vancouver is being very close-minded. I think I think a lot of the problem, a lot of the controversy with the sport in Vancouver, and I don't know why this is, it revolves around gangster stuff. They associate, you know, MMA with gangster activity, gang
yeah,
activity,
which
like the Hells Angels, and
right,
which is so, you know, which is so close-minded and so not the case. You know, the port. We know that they import a tremendous amount of drugs through the ports in Vancouver. So does that mean that that the ports should be shut down because there's criminal activity going on there? You know.
And this is a city that had a heroin needle exchange program, by the way.
That was my next sentence. I just barely watched a show the other night called The Beat on television. That's basically talking about the Lower East Side and how the bureaucrats have turned their back to the, you know, on these people and basically just opened up the door. They feel like it's their right to be down there and to do heroin and crack. And in my experience in Vancouver is that anytime I've been there, it seems like a green light for anybody on Hastings Street to sit there and do crack and heroin.
Yeah, but as long as they don't punch each other on the ground.
Yeah, apparently that's it. As long as they don't put a pair of MMA gloves on in a mouthpiece and get blood tests and do all these, you know, there's so many regulations on the sport now, and as long as they don't do that, then it's okay. But, yeah, I think basically it's just a pretty ignorant, closed-minded, you know, attitude. And that alone, you know, just the money that it generates for the city, if nothing else, you know, it's like bringing an event like the UFC. I was in Vancouver for the UFC, and, I mean, there was, you know, thousands and thousands of people. It was a sellout. And
sure, 17,000 strong, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the hotels were all sold out. And, like, what that does for a city and its economy at a time when really people are, you know, businesses and people are struggling through a recession, and to be that close-minded, I don't get it. And all it really would take, and I'm sure they've had this, is to have Mark Ratner come up there and really educate these people. And I'm sure to get the go-ahead for the first event that happened, that these people were educated and they were brought up to speed. And
now that it's done, that they want to let it die and pretend it never happened.
It was a huge success. There wasn't.
It's a huge success. Let's never do it again.
Yeah, not a fight, not an incident. I remember reading afterwards that there was no reported incidents. The police said it was a huge success, you know, from their standpoint. And which makes me think of another thing, and it's kind of off topic. Not off topic, but I recall when we fought in Montreal the first year in the UFC that the event went off without incident. There wasn't one arrest. There was nobody was thrown out. And then the next night, the Montreal Canadiens lost. And they rioted in the city and burned cars and burned businesses. Like, it's just such a, you know, it's such a closed-minded attitude. And unfortunately, that's the people that govern us.
Yeah, these are our representatives. Doesn't that make you scratch your head a bit?
Yeah, sometimes it sure does. But I guess I'm just a dumb fighter, and then those are the people that really know what's going on in the world.
Apparently. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jason. It's been a treat. Anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
Yeah, no plugs. I just thank you for all the fans out there that have been supporting me over the years. I will be back, and hopefully before 2011. I'm hoping for maybe a December return if everything goes as planned, and yeah, keep supporting the sport. It's a great sport, and if you know, keep reading my blog.
Then that blog is on sportsnet.ca. there was a plug you wanted to get in there.
Sure, well, I just threw that in there. I figured Sportsnet would appreciate it. Maybe they'll give me a raise.
You heard it here first. Give Jason McDonald more money, Sportsnet. Jason, the athlete McDonald, here on 101.9 FM. We'll be back right after this.
This boy and girl coming home from school look quite content with life. And why not? They're looking forward to an important date, dinner at home with the family. What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, UBC students have lots of on-campus dining options.
The Pendulum Restaurant, your source for fresh dishes made in-house. The Pendulum boasts a large selection of vegan dishes, a comfortable atmosphere, and tasty breakfasts. On sunny days, you can also enjoy the licensed patio. Conveniently located next to the pit, the Pendulum is open 7 days a week. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
To the engine moaning out his one old song. Think about the woman, the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do. When you're riding 16 hours, there's nothing much to do. Feel much like riding. We just wish the trip was through. Here I am on the road again. Here I am upon the stage. Here I go.
Yeah!
Metallica, Turn the Page on 101.9 CITR FM, the theme song for Jason McDonald, who is a great guy, great fighter, and we all look forward to seeing him back in the octagon sooner rather than later. Last Saturday night, gave us a great night of fights, great value for the dollar, so to speak, as Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen faced off for the middleweight championship of the world. There was a ton of pre-fight hype going into this one, pretty much all coming from Chael Sonnen. Let's take a listen and see the kind of things Chael was saying in the lead up to the fight.
Anderson Silva is easily the most unpopular fighter in this company.
There's this dirtbag named Anderson Silva.
When Anderson Silva walks into a room, you could hear a rat piss on cotton.
I don't want to fight Anderson. I want to beat him down. I want to destroy Anderson.
He's got what I want, and envy keeps me up at night. Can we just be fair and say that? He's got 12 pounds of gold, and I want it.
That's the difference with me and Nate. He really wants to get that fight. Go fight him. But when you're done playing around, they'll call me.
People tell me he's a great fighter. I say, really? When did you see him fight? Because I haven't seen him fight.
A lot of that moving, or what you refer to as clowning, is what he uses for a setup.
He can go dance and be the Michael Jackson of MMA like he likes to do.
He's got a black belt under the Nogueira brothers.
Yeah.
I think a black belt under the Nogueira brothers is saying I got a free toy in my Happy Meal.
Well, Anderson's a fraud. He's a liar, and he's a thief. This guy's not from a bowing culture. You bow in Brazil, they'll hit you over the head and take your wallet out of your pocket. He beat up a math teacher. He beat up a slow and unathletic light heavyweight, a couple of them.
I beat every champion there's ever been except one.
He fought everybody in the world that wasn't named Chael Sonnen.
I stand here on my own free will. I stand here because I beat every middleweight they got in my way. Anderson's here because Dana White's making him.
His running is done. His 15 minutes are fame or up.
We don't have to fight. I issued him in writing. I sent it over my demands.
He leave the UFC for no less than 12 months. He issued an apology to the fans. Simple things. And he erect a statue in my likeness in his living room that he bowed to each evening.
He didn't accept them.
Who cares how he leaves? Just go. He's been threatening to go for a long time. Nobody cares. We're ready to see him leave. He's a nuisance. He's annoying. And he doesn't have any fans.
I've heard of you. Now, I didn't know I'd ever meet you. But ladies and gentlemen, this is Anderson Silva's fan. I heard that he had one.
People say, do you want to fight the best Anderson Silva? I don't care if it's the best Anderson or the worst Anderson. I'm going to beat either Anderson.
I'm going to put him on his prissy little ass. I'd light up a big old mouth cannon and I'd walk away laughing.
Who's the better one?
CP. Your ace. Your guy. Ace of hearts.
This isn't a fight that's going to be tit for tat.
This isn't a war. We're not going to go out and battle each other.
This is going to be a one-sided pounding, and I'm swinging the hammer.
How can you not get excited for a fight like that after that amount of trash talk? Well, Sonnen certainly did his part to sell the fight, but people were wondering, would he be able to back up what he was talking? And for 20-plus minutes, he did. Anderson Silva survived 23 minutes of domination from Chael Sonnen, but he managed to come back with a triangle choke and submit Sonnen in the closing minutes of the fight. The real story of the fight was how Silva looked like a mere mortal against Sonnen. The challenger relentlessly talked smack. You heard it there. And when he came forward, he did exactly what he said he was going to do. He pressured him from the opening bell. He smacked him with a straight left minutes into the fight and repeatedly took the champion to the mat, where the former All-American wrestler made life increasingly difficult for Silva. Going into the fifth and final round, Silva knew that he needed a stoppage to retain his title, and he definitely set up the submission finish. It was an incredibly dramatic fight. If you haven't seen it yet, by all means, track down the fight by any means necessary, legal or otherwise. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. After the fight, it did come out that Silva had suffered a rib injury during training and perhaps another broken rib during the first round, which may have hampered the champ. And he will be out until 2011, his management is now saying. When he does come back, he may come back to a Sonnen rematch or a long-awaited matchup with Vitor the Phenom Belfort. Sonnen, on the other hand, his future is less clear, but one thing's for sure, with early pay-per-view numbers coming in saying that the fight may have done close to a million buys, it looks like Chael Sonnen has established himself in the UFC as a carnival barker, if nothing else, for the next little while. In the semi-main event, John Fitch grinded out another decision victory over Thiago Pitbull Alves in a fight that Dana White said could dictate the next number one contender in the welterweight division. The fight saw Fitch utilize his oxygen-depleting top game on an already sluggish Alves, who again missed weight and failed to make 170 pounds. After the fight, Dana was non-committal about Fitch getting another title shot, as the fight was not the most aesthetically pleasing encounter, but he did take the time to chastise Alves for again missing weight and suggested that Alves would make the move up to 185 pounds, where hopefully the weight cut would not deplete him. UFC Hall of Famer Matt Hughes showed he can still hang with the big dogs in the welterweight division, defeating Ricardo Big Dog Almeida by submission in the first round. Hughes stunned Almeida with a left hook, then finished Almeida with a modified anaconda choke to defeat his third straight Gracie Jiu-Jitsu fighter, following wins over Matt Serra and Henzo Gracie. Up next for Hughes, he says he's taking the fall season off to do some hunting. Good for him. And the heavyweight division saw an amazing matchup between deadly Brazilian Junior Dos Santos and the rotund Roy Nelson. Dos Santos threw everything but the kitchen sink at the pear-shaped Nelson, but couldn't put away the American, who absorbed every shot and just kept coming forward like the Terminator. Or rather, pudgy version of the Terminator. Dos Santos picked up the decision victory and now will wait for the winner of the Brock Lesnar-Cain Velasquez fight for a shot at the heavyweight title. As for Nelson, adventure is heading to Burger King. Well, that looks to be it for me. I had a great time. Thanks again to Jason the Athlete McDonald for being on the show. Always a class act, 100%. Next week, we have a get ready. Hold on to your socks, folks, because we have an MMA legend that is going to be joining us. The one, the only El Guapo, Boss Rutten, will join us in the cage with Bards. If that's not enough to make you excited, I don't know what else to do, because my stomach's, you know, doing butterfly flips right now just thinking about next week. As I say, that looks to be the end for me. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back Tuesday, 4:30 Pacific time, or all over the interweb at www.citr.ca. My podcast is up there. And we're also on the interweb now. We have a Facebook page. I'm finally figuring out technology. www.facebook.com/inthecagewithbards. And you can also email us with your questions or comments at inthecagewithbards@hotmail.com. Until next time, that's the bell. Good night, folks.